Football Friday.
Football.
This is Exit 31 with Rain and Spencer on ESPN Radio and QSportsTalk.com.
Are we ready? I thought there was more to it.
That's it.
You know, I'm thinking...
You wanted short and sweet.
You know what? But I'm thinking to myself, I'm like, whoa, with the kerfuffle. Oh, that's right. That's because Pauly Scabilia wouldn't stop talking more than the voice guy. That's what happened there. Are you going in on his pick earlier, too, just a minute ago? Did you hear that? Anybody?
Locking it in on the Raiders.
Yeah, he was locking it on the Raiders. Welcome to Exit 31 on ESPN Radio, QSportsTalk.com. Spencer Davidson and Rain, or Rainster Dumas, Noster Davidson. Blue guy's in here today. These are my dogs. How did the Giants lose that game? And how does Albany keep it within 30? I think that's what I feel like.
They rely on an inept Syracuse offense.
We're trying to be, I don't even know what the word is. We're trying to look at this game like it's to be anything other than a blowout. But it's going to be a blowout. Am I wrong?
I mean, I hope it's going to be a blowout. Yeah.
Did you actually suggest the TRAP, and I don't mean the form of music, did you suggest a trap game? I don't think so.
No, I don't think it's going to be a trap game. I don't think Syracuse is going to lose this. However, you can't overlook your opponent in any game. It doesn't matter how much worse they are. You can't do it. Otherwise, it could turn into a trap game. It could turn into a situation where, you know, you think you're going to go in and beat them by 50 points. And to be honest, if you beat them by one or two touchdowns, it's a disappointment.
Okay, I'm going to go off on the Giants in a few minutes.
You won't.
On a Football Friday. No, I'm done with Jason Garrett. I'm done. Yeah. I'm done. I was done the other day when we talked to Jordan Renan, and I think I'm still done with him. He's too conservative and predictable. We'll talk Giants today. John Schmelk with Giants.com, actually our other Giants guy, because this is the home of Giants football, talking about ESPN Radio. He's at about 3:15 today on the Accelerate Sports Complex phone line. Jeff Abramo is going to join us from inside the Loud House with the Fansided Network. We've got to talk about Q's football with him. And you may or may not have noticed that the Syracuse men's basketball schedule popped out. And there's going to be a lot of pomp and circumstance when Coach K and Jim Boeheim are in the dome for the last time. You've got to send him out with the farewell tour type of, I mean, give him gifts. And whether you like it or not, listen, we hate Duke as far as the basketball team, but you got to respect Coach K. And you know how tight those two are, how Coach Boeheim and Coach K are. I mean, they're brothers from another.
That's right.
They are.
Team USA coaching staff, former. I mean, with what Coach K has done in his career, Rain, like you said, you have to respect his resume, his line of work. But at the same time, you know, he was also the head coach of Team USA for a long time. So as an American, you can't hate on him.
Yeah, that takes it next level.
Yeah.
I certainly hope that we crush them this year, though. Did you see they got another, like, 5-star recruit, though, yesterday?
Ugh,
I don't even want to get into that. I look at their recruiting class, and I'm like, oh,
of riches.
Boy, yeah, it sure is. It sure is. Got a little mini kerfuffle on the way, and on the subject of Syracuse football against Albany, we have the breakdown with Stephen Bailey. He'll be joining us at about 2:30 today. But let's kind of get through our own keys to the game. Let's have our opening discussion on that. Let's go Rainstradamus versus Nostra Davidson. Yesterday, by the way, you were Nostra Dinoson. Those pictures I have posted on social media. Check ESPN Rain. You were photoshopped in there by Ryan Mullen, who is a regular QSportsTalk.com chat and photoshops everybody. I think he dropped a Wonder Years one for the Orange Nation guys a few minutes ago. But needless to say, those were great. Have you seen them?
I have seen them. They're fantastic.
Has Mama Davidson seen them yet?
Not yet. You did tag me on social media saying that she has to see them, so I will have to point them out to her. But in terms of the Wonder Years one, who was Winnie Cooper? Is that Pauly? Is Pauly Winnie?
I got to go back and look.
Yeah.
I'll do that in a few minutes. So the game's at noon tomorrow, as we know. Let's get some of these key players on each team. What do you think? For me to start out, it was Jeff Undercover Undercuffler. That's his name. You're going to be hearing Undercuffler a lot, and you're going to giggle like a 12-year-old every time you hear it. I'm going to.
Yep.
I can't help myself. I'm also going to giggle if I hear Mo Jabby. They have a player named Mo Jabby on Albany. Is this their Super Bowl? I don't know. Is that a Super Bowl winning quarterback right there? I don't know. But you're going to be hearing that quite a bit. I don't think their offense is a massive concern. The one strength that they do have is that front seven. We've alluded to that over the course of the week in scouting Albany. I don't know how much they're going to do to stop. They're going to make They're going to make Syracuse look a lot better overall than they have been offensively. This is really a game to put up some numbers, to build some confidence, right or wrong. Who else for you steps off that roster on Albany that you want to talk about?
Well, I think their defensive unit as a whole is actually pretty good. Good enough to stop Syracuse? I mean, probably not. But, you know, for me, a player to watch is Carl Mofor. He's their running back. He's an All-American. Off to a slow start this year, but did find the end zone in their last game. So, he's only averaged 49.5 yards per game this year through a couple of games. So, you know, look, this Albany team is 0-2. They've got some good individual players. Their defensive unit is pretty solid. Jackson Ambush, perfect name for a linebacker. Ambush. He had 11 solo tackles and 7 assists for 18 total tackles the last time out. And so he's certainly a player to watch for if you're trying to run it up the middle. He's somebody that you have to take into account for sure.
You know, you got to give Albany credit. North Dakota State, they played them, and now Syracuse. I mean, they're stepping up in competition. They're not afraid to challenge themselves. I think they understand what they're getting themselves into with, well, two of their first three games this year. You've got to admire that. But, yeah, it seems to me it's D'Amico, Verse, and Ambush are the three guys we got a key on for them defensively. It is the front seven. You know, there's some people in the chat right now, QSportsTalk.com, saying the same thing. Albany's defense is pretty good.
Pretty good, yeah.
It is pretty good. Is it a team that we should beat by 25 or 30 points? I would think so. What was the number set at? 23, that was the spread?
Yeah, I believe so.
Over under at 44, though, as of yesterday. And I'm sitting there going, I still think that's... You take the over on that?
Well, Syracuse has to score 40, at least like 37, 40 points to be able to cover that spread because, you know, Albany might find the end zone once, maybe. I don't know. I don't think so. So that's kind of a tough one. I'd actually have to probably go the under on that.
I think the players that we want to focus on as we give you a little scouting report on Albany and Syracuse tomorrow right here on ESPN Radio and Exit 31. It is clearly as predictable as the play calling of Jason Garrett on my New York Football Giants. It's obviously the quarterbacks. It has to be. Why? Because we have been told, and we'll air this audio from Dino Babers. He said it himself on the Dino Babers show last night on the Brother Station when we get to soundcheck. But we will have a QB1, a starter. Who is the starting quarterback of the Syracuse football team? You know the answer after this game. You're going to get a half of each. And let me see what you got. And whichever one makes this offense hum, I think we're good to go. Do you feel like it's already with Tommy DeVito, and is there a conspiracy theory here, being named a captain? It's kind of a suggestion. Tommy, this is your job. Be the captain I've named you for this game. Go out there and let them know it's your job, it's been your job, and it's going to be your job. Or... is Garrett Schrader sitting there going, I got a chance, and what if he comes out and outperforms Tommy? How do you then name Tommy the starter if Garrett plays better overall and his numbers jump and pop off that page?
I think Tommy would really have to...
screw it up.
Would really, really have to have an awful showing to lose this in a game against Albany, to lose his starting quarterback spot. The problem is this is a... this is a no-win situation, effectively.
No, it's not. You're right.
We've talked about it for the last few days, the fact that you can't go much further than this without having a clear-cut number one starter. However, this game isn't really a measuring stick of what you're going to see the rest of the way out. So, yeah, after this Albany game, Dino Babers can say, all right, Tommy DeVito is our number one. You go into Liberty, DeVito looks terrible. Then what?
You're three games in, and it's Albany, and at the end of that, then you finally are going to concretely say, this is my starting quarterback. I said it earlier in the week, it's not the litmus test, but yet it is the litmus test.
Right, but at the same time, I mean, so what? Dino's going to say Tommy's the starter after a game against Albany, and then what happens again if... he doesn't play well against Liberty. Then the questions come right back. So that's why it's like, it's great. It's all good and great that Dino Babers is going to say who the QB1 is after the Albany game. But does it really matter? Because the discussion is going to open right back up in the Liberty game.
The conversation does not end when he names a starting quarterback at all for the remainder of the season. Liberty and then the ACC schedule. climb aboard. We got a roller coaster ride for you called Syracuse Football. ESPN Radio Exit 31. We're at QSportsTalk.com. Let's get into a mini kerfuffle. We got a few minutes left in segment number one before we dive back into sound check and, of course, our breakdown with Stephen Bailey and have a further conversation on Syracuse and Albany tomorrow. So let's kerfuffle. Let's prove what I said about Paulie Scabilia talking more than our sound guy by airing this. Hit it.
Who's got Twitter beef? Bulletin board material. We've got another Donnybrook, an athletic brouhaha. Let's go toe-to-toe. It's the Exit 31 Kerfuffle.
A classic conundrum.
I'm going to start an inner show.
Kerfuffle.
Jordan asked me, hey, can we get the voice guy to record some stuff for our show? And I said, no, we can't.
Exit 31.
Has the voice guy used for everything? The voice guy is 40 minutes of their show every day. They use the voice guy for everything, and we can't afford to pay him.
This is Exit 31. Here is Rain and WKTV Sports Director Spencer Davidson on ESPN Radio and QSportsTalk.com.
Winnie Cooper's got a little kerfuffle, a little beef with Exit 31 over there, doesn't he?
Is you see Winnie Cooper in that? Did you look?
No, I didn't look yet, but I'm just going to assume he is, or at least hope he is.
Paulie Sebelius, Winnie Cooper today on the Wonder Years due to a Photoshop. That's fantastic. I have a kerfuffle with Undercuffler because I'm not going to be able and laughing every time I hear the quarterback of Albany's name.
Mo Jabby. I mean, that feels like that one's even funnier.
Undercuffler to Mo Jabby. Undercover, Undercuffler. How many times can we set an over-under number? How many times that undercover is inadvertently said as opposed to undercuffler?
That's a good point.
That could happen, right?
I have to take my car in to get it looked at. I have some churning underneath on the underside of the car, and I feel like I'm going to go in there now and say, oh, I think there's something wrong with my undercuffler. It just sounds like it could be a car part.
Yeah, it absolutely really does. You know, these new-age cars, man, yep. And the technology. Listen, fact is, the kerfuffle for me is the New York Giants versus 0-2 starts. I mean, come on, Dexter Lawrence. How did that loss happen? Why? Undisciplined? He jumped? Listen, he's not a rookie. It's not his first game. I said this to you before we got on the air here on Exit 31 on ESPN Radio, but you can't do that.
Nope.
They literally won the game. They literally won the game. He missed the 54-yarder, and then that happened. I mean, the Giants going to Giants now. It's like the Mets going to Mets, the Jets going to Jets, and the Syracuse football is going to Syracuse football. I mean, what's going on?
Well,
hey, the Yankees are going to lose to the Orioles 8 times.
Yeah.
It's frustrating to watch. It was an embarrassing way to lose a football game. This is the highest level of football. You can't do that. Bradbury came through clutch. You went for a field goal there. Why don't you go for a touchdown there? Why don't you finish them? You didn't finish them. You gave them a chance to get back in the game. They did. They missed a field goal. How lucky do you get? That's a makeable field goal at this level, at any level. And then you hand it to them on a silver platter. Yeah, we didn't want to win the game here. Try again. Enough.
So I'm guessing you feel good about that game, huh?
Yeah, I feel great. That's what I like to see out of my team. What is it, 5 years in a row they've been 0-2?
5 years in a row they've been 0-2. They have the worst record over the past, 7 years, I think, in the NFL?
Since 2013, the most 0-2 starts.
So 8 years.
The Giants have 8, the Colts have 4, the Saints have 4, the Jaguars have 4.
And the Jets aren't even on there. How about that?
That's not a list that you want to be on.
How about that? My Jets, what a franchise.
Let me take you through this.
What a franchise.
Let me take you through this.
They are something.
Here's your mistakes, your missed opportunities. Darius Slayton dropped the wide open touchdown. He was 20 yards clear.
Yep.
And that was a catchable ball. Hit him in the hands. You got to catch that.
Yep.
CJ Board, the holding play. Daniel Jones runs for the touchdown. Nope. They settle for the field goal there. You left points on the board right there. How many points? The winnable margin in either one of those.
Yep.
Unbelievable. Dexter Lawrence, of course, jumping off sides, giving him the chance, a second chance. And a first impression.
I'm gonna counter on that last one though, and I just want your. I'm not saying either way, but I want your take on it. But do you think that Dexter Lawrence jumping off sides could have influenced the miss wide right? You know, the kicker sees movement early. He rushes a bit. Maybe that had to do with it. So can you really sit there and say
no? He pushed it.
Yeah. Can you really sit there though and say that maybe that didn't have influence on the miss. So it's not a guarantee he would have missed.
His momentum or influence on that play could have affected his ability to kick the ball through the uprights and still not jump off sides. Mm-hmm. He could have waited for the snap. Watch the ball.
Yep.
Just watch the ball. You're right in front of the ball.
Yeah, I mean,
he's directly across from the center. It's inexcusable.
The Giants are going to Jets.
I know it's two games in.
The Giants are going to look. You know, you always say, "Oh, the Jets are going to Jets." This is becoming a Giants are going to Jets. The Giants are essentially the New York Jets now. How does that feel? They're worse than the Jets. They've had a worse record over the past 8 years or whatever.
Whatever. Ojulari looked like a good pick.
Yeah,
from the edge, couple sacks in a couple games. You've got an automatic for a kicker. Graham Gano was 5 for 5. Is it 35 straight? So yeah. There's a couple of positives. I guess Saquon Barkley didn't get hurt. Daniel Jones is an NFL quarterback. The conversation, you know what? I've got, don't call me biased. There's your quarterback. He showed that he has the ability to not fumble. There were no turnovers on his part, and he was protected. Crazy to think with Nick Gates being carted off the field and then Matt Skura having to be added to the offensive line and basically added to the active roster. Then you had Billy Price switching over to center. And yet the offensive line, much maligned, which has been bad, clearly, actually protected him. They gave him time, and he made some great throws. What he did with his legs as well. I mean, if you put him in the right positions to succeed, Daniel Jones is a legitimate, he's 24 years old, a legitimate NFL quarterback. The Giants are fine. His teammates love him. If you don't see it, you're blind. That's Sterling Shepard on Daniel Jones. That's someone I can say I can challenge, or that's someone I can say can challenge me with his work ethic. I've never seen anything like it. It's Kobe-like, to be completely honest. That's Saquon Barkley on Daniel Jones. They believe in him. That speaks volumes. The fact is, it's the predictable conservative play calling with Jason Garrett.
Well, you.
That's the problem with this team. Where's the play action? Did you see a lot of that? You know what? You've got a running back coming back from injury, a questionable offensive line that you don't really know what it is. Buy him some time in the pocket. And I understand he had some last night, but moving forward, that is something to think about.
Yeah.
And modernize your play calling. It is so predictable. They ran the same play with Saquon like 6 times during the course of that game. They knew it was coming, and that's when they would stuff him. Yeah. And then you saw what he could do on the one big run in the first quarter. Can you talk me off the ledge, please, quick, because we got to take a break.
Well, if you play not to lose instead of play to win, these type of things are going to happen. If you play so conservatively because you're worried about losing, you're going to keep the opponent around enough for them to be able to take an opportunity to win. That's what you saw last night. But really quick, can we just mention Taylor Heinicke?
He's great.
I mean, he was great.
Yeah,
he was great in that game. 34-46.
Good for him.
336 yards, 2 touchdowns.
That's nice.
Yeah, an interception, but he was clutch at the end.
Whatever you say.
So, you know, you got to give him some credit. It wasn't all Giants. It wasn't all Giants mess, you know, screwing up. They did, but you know, Washington did take it.
I look at QSportsTalk.com. Kevin from Liverpool's in there and says it's a Giants kerfuffle. Wasn't it really at one point Kenny Galladay screaming at Daniel Jones, however much ado about nothing, yep, is what we heard in the postgame press conference?
Yeah.
Interesting to watch that, though.
Yeah,
he wanted the damn ball. You think they'll be all right?
They'll be fine. It's like the Lindor McNeil from the Mets earlier this year.
And we forgot all about that.
Yeah.
It hasn't been an issue since.
It's fine.
Okay, Exit 31, ESPN Radio, QSportsTalk.com. We're back with Soundcheck. We're going to hear from Dino Babers from the Dino Babers Show last night.
This is Exit 31 with Rain and WKTV Sports Director Spencer Davidson on ESPN Radio and QSportsTalk.com. Listen to this. Mic check. Okay, good. Here's your sports soundcheck.
Yankees on deck tonight with the glue guy and myself. My name is Rain. That's courtesy of Ferone & Son Funeral Home, Pathfinder Bank, and the Killebrew Saloon. Whenever we talk about them here on Exit 31, brought to you by William Attire. If you're hurt in a car, call William Attire at 444-4444. I haven't even ranted about them yet. I'm so disgusted. It's the same feeling with the Yankees and the Orioles. How do you lose to them 8 times? If they don't make the playoffs somehow, they're half game out of the second wild card, it's losing 8 games. The most games in the American League East of any team against the Orioles. That's the difference maker right there. Beat the teams you're supposed to beat. How do you choke it out last night like you did? How does this happen to my teams? The Giants and the Yankees are just disappointing me. I'm drooling the drool of remorse into the pillow of regret. Yes, I am.
It was just it's terrible. I mean, not only is it the most losses out of anybody in the AL East to the Orioles, but the rest of the teams in the AL East combined
Spencer,
have only lost to the Orioles 10 times.
Spencer, can't you like glass half full and make me feel better? Oh, that's
no.
Right. You're a Yankees fan too. Here, hold on a second.
The glass isn't half full.
It's sound check. Let's air a little sound here. Here you go.
Well, Susan, I thank you.
Did you see Sweetie Murdy's been filling in for Susan, by yep. the way? And when that happens, Susan, I thank you. No, you get Sweeney, I thank you, or some variation of that.
Stepping up to the mic is the voice of the New York Yankees, John Sterling.
Well, I thank you, Sweeney.
Well, I thank you, Sweeney.
That was two games ago, and then last night it was actually Sweeney, I thank you.
Well.
What? So yesterday on the broadcast,
isn't
I was
it funny.
I was in the car at the very beginning of the broadcast, coming back from shooting a girl's high school soccer game in our area, and John Sterling said that Sweeney Murdy is filling in for Susan Waldman today, who is observing Yom Kippur. And I'm like, but John, you're Jewish too. Why are you doing the game?
He wasn't observing. It's that simple.
Yeah, I guess not. But I just thought that was pretty funny.
I think he just wanted to delight us with the greeting to Sweeney Murphy or to Sweeney Murdy, where he could say, "And Sweeney, thank you."
Sweeney, I thank you, and that'll do it for me.
Let me get this out of my
taking the rest of the game off.
Let me get this out of my system as it pertains here on Soundcheck on ESPN Radio to the New York Football Giants. I need to hear it one more time.
And now a 43-yard drive for the win. Good snap, good hold. Oh. Kick is good. Washington wins it. A game that saw five lead changes, three in the fourth quarter alone. And this was some game here in Landover.
Yeah, it was some game. It was something. It was something, and it wasn't good if you're a Giants fan. You know what? Greeny agrees with me. They were too conservative. Yeah, this is Greeny.
The Giants picked Daniel Jones sixth in the draft. They have done everything they can to go all in on developing him into a quarterback. If you don't trust him to not turn the ball over in that situation. I mean, Lamar Jackson threw a pass the other night that hit a guy in the helmet and kicked straight up in the air. If you don't trust him to win you the game in that situation, he shouldn't be your quarterback.
He showed you he can make the throws if you give him time in the pocket. Unless you saw something else, Spencer.
No, I mean, I saw relatively the same thing. To me, though, it's one game. And until you start seeing this consistently from Daniel Jones, I don't think you can quite say yet, oh yeah, he's got it. He's figured it out. Does he look like he has the potential tools? Absolutely. It's like Zach Wilson the other day. He looks like he's got the tools to be a good quarterback.
He showed he has the tools. What we haven't seen is them consistently blocking for him. When you're on the run every game, you're going to get happy feet, and you're not worried about holding onto the ball. You're worried about the three guys that are about to blast you for the 20th time in that game. That's the problem. And you know what? You're not calling the right plays to put him with his skill set in the positions to succeed. That's on Jason Garrett, too, which is the overlying biggest issue with that team right now, with this team right now, with my team right now.
Are you saying that the offensive line is important?
It's important
that the offensive line, if you have an atrocious offensive line, you can even make a good quarterback look bad. Is that what you're saying? Is that what you're saying?
Yeah.
Rain?
Sorry, am I mansplaining?
No. That's not my point. My point is, haven't I been saying that for the past 3 years when it comes to Sam Darnold and the Jets? Didn't I say that after this week with Zach Wilson in the first half?
So it's an issue for a lot of teams is what you're trying to say?
What I'm saying is, you're confirming what I've been saying the last few years when it comes to people giving up on Sam Darnold, when it comes to Zach Wilson not looking great in the first half of the game on Sunday.
Who said you could make this about the Jets right now?
I did.
Oh, yeah. Okay. All right. Continue. I'll let you. Go ahead.
But my point is that you're right. You're right. Daniel Jones showed flashes that he has the tools. But when you are on the run constantly, when you don't have a chance to get into rhythm, it doesn't matter. You can be Patrick Mahomes in the Super Bowl Your offensive line is Swiss cheese. You're not going to look good. Patrick Mahomes looked terrible in the Super Bowl in February.
All right, I want to get to a couple pieces of Dino Babers, so I'm going to cut you off right there. Soundcheck on ESPN Radio with Exit 31. This is Alan Hahn on Saquon Barkley. Let me air this so I can get to a couple from Dino real quick because we got to get to Stephen Bailey momentarily.
Him even talking about trusting it, getting trust in it, that's telling you he doesn't yet trust it.
The knee.
That's a major concern. Because when an athlete does not trust his body after an injury, it's dangerous to have him out there.
Yeah,
it really is. It tells me that mentally he is not really ready, but everybody's telling him he's healthy, but he's kind of hinting to you there, I'm not quite there yet.
And there you go. We'll leave that there. Let's bring in Dino Babers on soundcheck really quick. How do you take a loss and turn it into a positive? As we head into this Albany game, obviously referencing Rutgers. You heard this on the Dino Babers show last night.
Really good football teams understand that it's very difficult to win them all.
Yeah.
But you have to continue to get better, and you got to continue with that growth. And the thing that we can't have is we can't be stagnant. We need to grow from the loss last week. And if we grow the correct way, it'll pay dividends down the road, even though it's a negative. You got to find a way to turn a negative into a positive.
I got no argument with what you said there. Here's more Dino. He's going to make the QB decision after Albany. We discussed this a few minutes ago.
Well, we're going to make a decision after this game. So I would love clarity. If not, we'll still make a decision after this game.
And don't we all want clarity? And this is what he wants from the QBs, I guess, to make that decision.
I would like to see some clicking. I'd like to see the ball spread around from a throwing standpoint, all different areas. It doesn't matter whether they hit numerous various receivers or stick with one or two receivers. I think that the command of the offense and just kind of that swag that they can go out there and they can do this and the team wants to follow them.
All right, keep those words from Dino Babers in your head. We'll have a discussion in the breakdown with Stephen Bailey with 24/7 Sports. That is next. We'll get to some keys to the game. Syracuse and Albany tomorrow, obviously, and right here on Exit 31 on ESPN Radio and QSportsTalk.com.
This is Exit 31.
In about an hour, I'm going to f*** away 20 grand.
What, are you going to bet on the Knicks? I'm sorry. I mean, how often? I mean, oh, man, nobody thinks that's funny?
Exit 31 with Rain and Spencer on ESPN Radio and QSportsTalk.com.
Well, I'd bet on the Knicks now. Not sure that'd be such a bad thing. We're talking to Stephen Bailey in this segment with 24/7 Sports to break down Syracuse versus UAlbany coming up tomorrow at noon. Stephen, I want to start off with, you know, Dino Babers saying that he's going to be naming a QB1 after this game. Now, I mean, do you really believe that? Because he could sit there and say, yeah, Tommy is our clear-cut number one starter. But, you know, the second Tommy struggles, if even in the Liberty game, all of a sudden the questions are back, and is Garrett Schrader going to be in there? So, I mean, do you buy it? Do you buy that he's really going to make a full-time QB1 selection with no changes after this week?
Well, I don't think he wants to, you know, say, oh, I'm not going to make a change after this week. But he doesn't want to have to worry about whether or not he's playing his backup quarterback based on an opportunity to evaluate, right? Like, I think what's probably going to happen is Syracuse got demolished Albany. Both of the quarterbacks have some level of success. Tommy is the starter. But look, if things go wrong at any point during the year, obviously Tommy gets hurt or they can't protect or the offense is really, really struggling, then, yeah, of course we'll turn to the backup. I mean, you know, that's what Tommy was in 2018. He was the guy off the bench for Eric Dungy, and he got called on. And, you know, there's nothing that says whoever the backup ends up being can't play over the rest of the year. It's just like, you know, Dino has clearly put a lot of energy and time and focus into this quarterback competition. I think he wants to be able to spend that on other areas of his offense. So, yeah, I mean, I think there will be a starter and a backup after this week. But, you know, it just means that in Liberty – Dino's going to play who he thinks should play, not, oh, you know, we need to get Garrett in there because he needs a fair shake. And then, look, I don't think there's an easy way to handle that. You know, when you bring in a transfer like that and you don't make him live in the spring or fall camp, which is pretty standard, this is the situation you find yourself in. So you either let it drag out or you make a call. And, you know, I understand why he's doing that with all the other things he needs to address.
He's been asked if Garrett, you know, he's worried about Garrett transferring. Let's say Garrett is not named the starting quarterback, and I kind of think it's leaning that Tommy's going to be. But what if they both perform really well against Albany. It just kind of, listen, the fan base at the very least is going to be vocal and be questioning this all the time. I mean, you're going to go series to series. Syracuse punts. Oh, we need to bring in the other guy. I mean, it's going to happen all season long unless we're winning these games. I mean, and, you know, Dino's been asked about that before. But then again, there's also, hey, Garrett, the team is yours the next 2 years because Tommy's out of here after this year. Does any of that factor in, or am I just spewing a nonsense conspiracy theory?
No, I mean, that's not nonsense. Those are all contributing factors, right? I mean, no one wants to say this, but three players have left the program since the start of fall camp.
Yeah.
You know, six-year offensive lineman Cody Shear. I don't know all the circumstances. He probably wasn't going to play. He did have a laundry list of injuries, so I think there's probably multiple factors there. Ben LaBrosse decides to leave after Jason Simmons wins the starting job. And Landon Morris, a tight end who was basically told he'd be a hybrid. The Syracuse is going to throw the ball at the tight end, and he got here, and well, they're not. So, you know, the notion that someone could up and leave based on their expectations not being met, I think is a reasonable concern for any coach to have. Now, that said, you know, as I kind of said, Syracuse has big problems on offense. You know, the line needs to be better. Obviously, it's not the situation it was last year, but six sacks against Rutgers, no rushing game. Tisdale got blown up a bunch at right guard. Vettorello missed some inside stunts on key third downs. There's going to be changes there. And the passing game needs to find continuity. I mean, the quarterbacks and receivers are clearly not on the same page. So shuffling quarterback is only going to exacerbate that issue. So, you know, I get it. You know, you kind of got them. You know, I understand why a coach would say, hey, we got to make a decision and live with the ramifications, because the issues that stem from having multiple quarterbacks in there and having this hanging out there are potentially setting the offense back from fixing what are frankly more prevalent issues. The issue in the Rutgers game wasn't who was playing quarterback. It was the line and frankly, a lot of the receivers. So, and even Garrett Schrader knows that after the game. He said, it's not about who, it's about what. So, you know, I get why Dino's doing what he's doing. It's going to be tough. The fan base is probably not going to be happy if it ends up being Tommy DeVito as the starter. And, you know, he's not great in the first quarter against Liberty. But at a certain point, you kind of got to make a decision and roll with it.
Stephen Bailey, Syracuse reporter for 24/7 Sports, joining us on the Accelerate Sports phone line. We're on ESPN Radio and QSportsTalk.com. Stephen, you know, I'm not saying that this is a trap game, because I think it would absolutely have to be just the most colossal failure for Syracuse to lose this. However, you can't overlook any opponent. If you're Syracuse, how do you make sure that you do all the things right and you don't fall into bad habits in this game in order to, even if you win this game, really set you up for failure later on in the season?
I mean, gosh, this is going to sound so bad. I don't think you have much to worry about in terms of the game. Mm-hmm. But if I'm Dino Babers, I don't really care. It's not about how much you win by, right? You can go and pick the Ohio game plan and run outside zone right 30 times and run all over them and win 52-0. But does that solve your problems?
No.
Do you know if you dial up the choice routes you're considering running, or the various timing issues in the receiving game? Like, are you able to really sort any of that out if you just run the ball downhill against a physically inferior team? You know, nothing, frankly. I mean, I think you're better off trying to work out some of those kinks. I think they're going to rest the players who need rest, but if you're trying to work out some of those timing issues to actually take something of substance into the Liberty game. Like, if Albany beats Syracuse, something disastrous has happened. This team is 0-2. Is averaging like 1.5 yards per carry. I would be surprised if Syracuse's defense gave up a touchdown. Like, it should not be a game. It's so much of this is about straightening what you can out for Liberty. And I mean, you can't do everything there. You know, I think there's going to be some changes in the offensive line with Dakota Davis back. Whoever is on the offensive line should manhandle Albany. But I think in terms of the passing game, there's a lot that you can work out just as far as timing and communication. What coverage are we seeing? Are we reading it the same way? Is the route depth what's expected? You know, what angle are you breaking? Things like that. You know, that to me, that's the biggest thing you can take away from this game, because, I mean, there's really no reason it should even be close. I would be shocked if it was closer than a honestly a 3-touchdown game, probably a 4-touchdown game.
We're getting a breakdown from Stephen Bailey with 24/7 Sports here on Exit 31 with ESPN Radio and QSportsTalk.com. You know, we went through a few of the key players on each team. Obviously, the quarterback situation for Syracuse. I'm going to throw a couple names at you in a second for Albany. But I actually just made sure I dug out one more. Their kicker's name is Dylan Burns. He's 5'8 and 190 pounds. If they have a chance to score, it's probably going to be because of his foot. And that's about the extent of it. Other than that, we were laughing a little bit because Albany's quarterback's name is Jeff Undercover Undercuffler. And we wanted to know if you wanted to set a number for us and how many times that is inadvertently spoken during the broadcast. Because I know I would do it if I was calling the game.
Yeah, a ton of times. I don't know if it's ACC Network. I don't know if the A team is exactly on Syracuse Albany in week 3 either.
Yeah.
Probably constantly. So hopefully that's something to keep the game interesting once it's out of hand.
Spencer, you and I really did point out, though, that one name to note on their defense is Jared Verse. He's got some size, 6'4", athletic, and if anybody's going to, I don't know, do any damage against the Syracuse offense, if you want to put it that way, it's probably him. Is there anybody else that we should look out for as far as you're concerned, Stephen?
No, you know, that's exactly what I was going to highlight. It's not, there's not like a real what-if scenario for this game to go wrong. For me, aside from offensive and special teams implosion, essentially, and giving Albany insane field position. And, you know, I mean, looking at Syracuse's defense, I mean, the potential area of weakness is the secondary, right? Miscommunications in the secondary. You got some young guys there. I think, you know, they gave up a little bit against Rutgers. They also got away with a couple against Rutgers. I don't think Albany's going to be able to run the ball in early downs to set themselves up in the situations you need to really get after that. You know, I think they're going to be behind the sticks time and time again, and it's just, you know, they're going to need a bunch of explosive defensive and special teams plays, just to have a chance. So there's not anything one individual on Albany can really do. It would take a basically widespread failure from Syracuse far beyond what we saw against Rutgers for this to be a game.
Stephen, what's the latest on the injury report on the owies for this team? And, you know, are there some guys that maybe are basically almost okay to play but might be held out simply because you don't want to risk it in a game like this?
Yeah, there's definitely a couple of those. I mean, they have, you know, Dino has said that Garrett Williams is right, you know, he's at practice, he's going to be ready to go. Why would you play your top corner who has a full season, you know, worth of performance? He's a proven entity. It's not like this experience is really valuable to his learning curve. Why would you play him against Albany? Like, he's got a nagging lower body injury. I would be surprised if we saw Garrett Williams, but not because he's unavailable, because, you know, you rest him. Someone like Kingsley Jonathan, you know, he didn't play in week 2. He did dress. I don't know, you know, so he was available. I don't know how close he was to playing. Again, why do you play a fifth-year defensive lineman when you've got guys who you can't trot out there? McKinley Williams, you know, I'm sure we'll see him again. He played about half of the game, I think about 40% of the snaps at defensive tackle, and was really effective against Rutgers. So he's working his way back. It sounds like we're going to see Dakota Davis for the first time this year, redshirt junior guard. I think the timing for his return is pretty good. Like I said, Darius Tisdale went into quite a few issues against a really strong Rutgers front. But Dakota is probably their best interior lineman, and having him back will do a lot in terms of run game, as well as picking up some of those inside stunts Syracuse has struggled with early this year. So that's about what I'm expecting. I would not be shocked if there was another starting caliber player or two who gets held out, who's like banged up, who, you know what I mean, maybe hasn't been publicly reported yet. But all in all, Syracuse is pretty healthy. There aren't major players with clear medium to long-term injuries. It's guys who, you know, you keep out with hopes of being fully healthy against Liberty.
I look at QSportsTalk.com, and anybody that's in the chat, they throw a question our way for Stephen Bailey. He literally answers them within the course of his answers to the questions that we have. Outstanding as usual with a breakdown. Stephen Bailey with 24/7 Sports. We'll talk to you again on Monday. We'll get a preview of the Liberty game and recap, of course, this game against Albany. It's ESPN Radio. This is Exit 31. You're Killing Me, Smalls, is next. Two gripes. Hang on.
You're killing me, Smalls. This is Exit 31. Here is Rain and WKTV Sports Director Spencer Davidson on ESPN Radio and QSportsTalk.com.
You're killing me, Smalls.
That is exactly the sound that played in my head.
You're gonna,
at the end of that Yankees game last
You're
going to
pee me off right now. You're going to tick me off.
Yeah.
You're going to do it again because you got me fired up about the Giants because you had to go there. I understand we had to go there. But I know it's going to happen, and, you know, the bear doesn't even need to be poked today. I'm just frustrated with the Yankees, and I'm frustrated with the Giants, and I know you're going to take your killing me smalls there, and I understand you have to do it. I'm just going to sigh a lot.
Yeah. Can I add an observation?
Sure.
Don't root for bad teams.
Oh, wow, wow.
Sound advice, thank
wow.
you.
Wow.
Got you.
Wow. Been holding on to that gem all day, haven't you?
Well, yes.
Would you stay up all night thinking of that one? Nah, I got to bed around 2:30.
Well played, glue guy. All right, Spencer, you're killing me, Smalls.
It's just, I mean, this Yankees team, it's baffling. It's baffling. You put together three wins. You know, your last win was too close, but a win's a win. So, okay, we'll look past that. And then, I mean, you absolutely crap the bed against the Orioles. I mean, on a wild pitch, you're one strike away from sweeping the Orioles, doing the job that you needed to do, and staying in a spot in the wild card. And you just, you crap it away. Are you kidding me?
Weenie eye. Thank you.
It's so frustrating. And then this team couldn't get anything done with the ghost runner on second. I mean, come on. It's a gimme. For this lineup, there's no excuse to start off with a runner in scoring position and no outs and not bring a run home.
You just don't know what damn team you're getting from day to day with the Yankees. You had a stretch there where they were winning the 13 in a row and all of that, but everybody was either hurt or on COVID, and it was the Scranton Yankees, and your Andrew Velasquez's and Allen was up, and they were manufacturing runs. Completely different than the way this team is constructed when everybody is healthy, but it was more fun, and I actually had more faith in the team, and as everybody's come back now, I sit there and I go, is it going to be the team represented very well, by the way, by the red hot Joey Gallo, where everybody's hitting home runs and they win and they pitch well? Or is it the team that doesn't hit at all? And then there's questionable pitching. And then some of these guys that have been overworked or they are not performing up to the back of their baseball card, up to the standards that you would expect, say, out of an Aroldis Chapman or a Chad Green who's been overused. And it just implodes, and you choke it away like you did last night. We were one strike away.
One strike away.
And then it goes to extra innings last night, and here we are. Unacceptable to lose 8 times to the Baltimore Orioles. You know what that's doing? That is killing me, Smalls.
You're killing me, Smalls.
I held it in as long as I could. Real quick on the Giants, go ahead. Go ahead.
Joe Judge came here, and he is supposed to be the epitome of discipline. He's supposed to be the guy that's going to bring a culture where he says we are not going to beat ourselves.
Then fire Jason Garrett and get a modern offense in here and use Daniel Jones and apply his skill set. Did he come when he was drafted number 6 out of Duke and everybody questioned Gettleman? Was he considered a dual threat quarterback?
No.
He is a dual threat quarterback. Also, run the play action. It protects the horrible line. It doesn't make them look as bad. It buys him another second or two in the pocket, which he showed you last night. If you give him that, he can throw the football on an elite level. Inexcusable drop by Slayton. Inexcusable. The touchdown down the sideline, back shoulder, was a thing of beauty.
Yeah.
You know what? And if you don't get Galladay the ball, he's going to explode because he was screaming. You know what? It was funny. I saw a couple of instances where there's guys that Daniel Jones is missing, and that's just simply the offensive coordinator showing him the tape. Let's clean up those little details like that. There were no turnovers either last night. So when things play out the right way and you fix these small problems through the course of a season, Daniel Jones can help them win some football games. There's far worse quarterbacks in the NFL. That's not my Giants homer bias. I saw that last night.
Yeah.
Did you? Or am I wrong?
No, you're not wrong. But again, it's one game where he performed well. So
Blue guy,
I think for
Blue
me
guy,
to be
wait, hold on. Blue guy, wipe that smirk off your face.
Why?
You're a little smarmy. Did you see that?
I did.
He smirked. He's like, go ahead.
I don't think Daniel Jones is it. He showed you something on a Thursday night game. How often are Thursday night games representative of what you see on a Sunday game?
Well, it was
going to be usually about a 180 difference.
Spencer, did you need to finish really quick? Are you good?
No, I mean, I'm good now. I was going to get rolling, but the train stopped now. It's tough to get going again, but I don't know. I got to say, with that smirk on your face, man, I hope Mac Jones, like, just, like, throws three interceptions.
Aiming this fire at you.
Yeah, that's fair. You're right.
He did. You're the Jets guy.
I'm sorry. I'm triggered. Whenever a Patriot fan talks crap again about anybody, I get triggered. So, yeah. I'm sorry. You're right. You didn't come at me. That wasn't fair.
Well, all right. I guess the target is now off of Jason Garrett and firmly on the glue guy.
You're killing me, Smalls.
ESPN Radio Exit 31, QSportsTalk.com. We go behind enemy lines next. We'll talk to Adam Schindler with the Daily Gazette about the Syracuse-Albany game tomorrow. And he's a Cuse alum.
This means war.
Rain and WKTV sports director Spencer Davidson go behind enemy lines.
This means war.
Oh, poof. A war.
How dare you call me crazy? This means war.
This means war.
This means intense conflict. That's not the same.
This is Exit 31 on ESPN Radio and QSportsTalk.com.
This is officially the best rejoin beat that we have on Exit 31 here on ESPN Radio, QSportsTalk.com. A class of 07, and we just learned off the air that Adam Schindler committed to Syracuse basically because Syracuse won the national championship in 03. He was a freshman that fall, graduated in 07, now with the Daily Gazette. And he covers the Albany Great Danes. They're playing Syracuse in football tomorrow. You may be aware of that. Spreads 23-44 over under. A lot of us are thinking it's going to be a blowout, but we're going to see what Adam has to say about that. Welcome to the airwaves, man. And what are your opening thoughts?
Yeah, thanks for having me. And it's been a rough start for the Albany Great Danes this year. This is a game that really, they need to have something go positive for them if they want to get into their bye week next week with any sort of confidence, because it has not been on the offensive end a pretty start for you, Albany.
So can we just, okay, don't laugh, but we've been having fun at the expense of the quarterback, Jeff Undercuffler, calling him Jeff Undercover. We wonder if you have any intel. Has anybody inadvertently ever called him Jeff Undercover on the air during a broadcast or at any point? And we were wondering if you want to set an over-under number for us on whether or not it'll happen tomorrow.
Yeah, not since I've been around now. This is only my my second season on the beat, so I can't really vouch for what happened during his freshman season in 2019. but didn't hear any. So if I put an over-under, I put it at a half, one half, just to see if it happens. Which when you get a when you get an FBS crew calling an FCS game, there's always going to be a little bit of confusion.
That's for sure.
Speaking with Adam Schindler with the Daily Gazette here on the Accelerate Sports phone line, ESPN Radio, QSportsTalk.com. Adam, we know that that Carl Mofor has had kind of a rough start to the season, but he's an All-American back. Roy Alexander, rookie wide receiver, has gotten out to a good start to his collegiate career. So who are some of the players with them or besides them that you're looking at here to kind of step up and show something positive here against Syracuse this weekend?
Yeah, Carl Mofor is really where things start for that UAlbany offense. He's not a game-breaking running back, but he's a guy who if he's able to get 25 carries a game, he can get you 125 to 150 rushing yards. And he's had behind a pretty young offensive line, really nowhere to go until the second half of the game against Rhode Island this past weekend. Elsewhere on offense, Roy Alexander is a freshman who got the start in the slot, kind of as a surprise, and has really kind of emerged as the best big play threat in that UAlbany offense. But really, the big thing that I think Albany is going to want to see is improved play out of their offensive line and out of their quarterback, Jeff Undercuffler. It's just been a lot of when teams have been able to shut down their running game, they've been able to tee off and get their pass rush after them. And against Rhode Island, 5 sacks last week, 3 of them on the last drive of the game. So Undercuffler really needs to kind of be on schedule on time to have his game at rate where he wants it to be. And I know head coach Greg Gattuso at Albany is really, really worried about both Syracuse's pass rush and their secondary. So that's going to be a big test for the Great Danes.
Yeah, and he's been having a problem from what I was reading from an interview you did with John Castillo. Castillo, I hope I pronounced that right. He's some ill-advised throws. You got a good secondary and a good defense that you're going up against. A little hero ball was mentioned. So it's going to be a tough task for him for sure. Want to flip to the defensive side of the ball, though, and the one key name that we've looked at. And, you know, one of the strengths of Albany is that front seven, and Jared Verse is the name we've been told to keep an eye on. Tell us more about him.
Yeah, Jared Verse is a guy who was really kind of under-recruited out of high school because he was just really skinny. He was probably 200, 210 pounds coming out of high school in Pennsylvania. But a fantastic athlete, got his first action in the spring and just exploded on the field. There was a point in UAlbany's game against Stony Brook last spring where he takes Stony Brook's 340-pound right tackle and just bull rushes him straight into the quarterback. And it's at that moment that you realize that this kid, if he harnesses everything, and he's pushing about 250 pounds right now, this is a kid who is going to end up playing on Sundays at some point, and really kind of plays the pass as well as he plays the run, is a very, very talented edge rusher who is going to get a lot of talk nationally at the FCS level over the next couple of years.
Adam Schindler with the Daily Gazette here on the Accelerate Sports phone line. Exit 31 ESPN Radio, QSportsTalk.com. Adam, what is the general mood of this Albany team coming off the two losses to start the season? Haven't really been able to put up a lot of points on offense. So what's the mood here as they're coming into a game that, you know, is against a Power 5 opponent? You're going into the Carrier Dome in front of thousands of fans. You know, just what's the team feeling at this moment in time?
You know, it's a team that coming off Saturday night, there was definitely a lot of frustration because that was a game that UAlbany definitely felt it should have won, especially when they dropped two snaps by their holder on field goals that would have proved the difference in the game. But it's also a team that head coach Greg Gattuso says they don't get too low or too high. They're a very businesslike team, and it's a team that has experience playing in a big, loud environment. Earlier this season, 2 weeks ago, they were at North Dakota State, which, while it's not as big as the Carrier Dome, obviously the Fargo Dome is, they say, everything's right on top of you there. It's a different kind of noise, but they're kind of in a position where they know a little bit of what to expect. They've got a handful of guys who are either from the Syracuse area or played high school games at the Dome. So they're really hoping for them. They've got a brutal schedule in the Colonial Athletic Association coming out of this. So this is a game for them where they just know they need to kind of get some things right and get some confidence back.
Previewing Syracuse and Albany tomorrow with Adam Schindler, with the Daily Gazette. And we're behind enemy lines on ESPN Radio and QSportsTalk.com. Since he is a Syracuse alum and got his degree back in 07, this next question from Glue Guy plays right into that.
Yeah, so Adam, we always ask anyone that comes on the air with us, for home games especially, if there's a favorite Dome memory that you have. And obviously, we asked you before you came on the air with us, you can give that same answer, or you can give another one since you're an alum with the team.
Yeah, no, my favorite Dome memory goes back to, so this would have been the, I believe it's the 2004-2005 season. It's the basketball game against Notre Dame when ESPN College Game Day makes its first basketball visit ever to the Dome. And they go on a run in the second half that Hakeem Warrick punctuates with this dunk off the baseline. And it was one of those moments where you get that sound like a jet engine taking off in the Carrier Dome. And it was just one of the craziest, surreal days. You know, we were there from, you know, 8 a.m. Lining up for game day. And that game is there, the primetime game. So this 12-hour day that caps with just an unbelievable win. And just kind of a surreal night. And it kind of really summed up the amazing experience that could be at the Dome.
Adam, are you willing to admit as an alum that you want to see Syracuse crush Albany tomorrow? Or do you want to call BS on me?
It's very much I've got to wear two hats.
Yeah.
Coming to this game tomorrow. I'd love to see UAlbany really show something this season and get back to the point where this was a team 2 years ago that won its first ever FCS playoff game. They won 9 games. They still have a lot of that core back. And this team has been kind of one or two moments away from really some much better results than they could have had, even dating back to their spring season. But as an alum, I do really want to see this Syracuse team get a little bit of confidence going after a pretty disappointing game a week ago against Rutgers.
That was a stellar and very diplomatic answer. Outstanding, Adam. Appreciate you taking our call today, and thank you so much for breaking down tomorrow's game. Is there, and the last question, about 30 seconds left, is there anything that we didn't ask you about that might be a talking point, something that you focused on leading into this game that we need to let these Syracuse fans know about?
Yeah, only other thing I would say is you have to look out for a pretty good UAlbany linebacking core. It's a deep group of guys who can make some plays, and UAlbany's going to be able to force some turnovers, which is probably how they're going to need to stay in this game, those linebackers might make it done.
Sounds good. Adam, thanks again for the time. We appreciate you. We'll be back, actually, on a football Friday. I want to have you on Syracuse and Albany right there, but this is the home of the New York Football Giants. So our guy with Giants.com, reporter John Schmelk, will join us next on ESPN Radio, Exit 31. And, of course, if there's anything Giants-related, I know everybody's sick to their stomach that's a Giants fan, you throw that up in the chat at QSportsTalk.com.
Football Friday.
Football.
This is Exit 31 with Rain and Spencer on ESPN Radio and QSportsTalk.com.
You've been hearing from John Schmelk with Giants.com for the better part of the last couple of seasons with us right here on Exit 31 on ESPN Radio. And I can guarantee you're going to hear it every Football Friday for the remainder. What do we have, 15 weeks left after this, 15 games? Lock it in at 3:15. Giants games are broadcast right here on ESPN Radio, so that's even better. He puts out a daily report. So if you're a Giants fan and you follow along off the website or whatever, you may have heard this before, but we want to start you out with pre-recorded John Schmelk. And in about 60 seconds, we're going to get you live, John Schmelk.
With your Giants Radio Network update, I'm John Schmelk. The Giants suffered a heartbreaking loss to the Washington football team on Thursday night, a 30-29 defeat on a 43-yard game-winning field goal by Dustin Hopkins as time expired. Just one play after Hopkins missed a kick wide right from 48 yards, but was given another chance because Dexter Lawrence was called for offsides. Daniel Jones played well, no turnovers in the game, 249 passing yards and a touchdown, but an incomplete pass might be his most memorable, a deep post that hit Darius Slayton in the hands but was dropped that could have given the Giants a two-score lead in the fourth quarter. The Giants' defense struggled to get off the field. Taylor Heinicke, 336 passing yards, a pair of touchdowns, and 11 penalties for 81 yards did not help the Giants on either side of the ball either. The Giants play the Falcons on September 26th at MetLife Stadium, but first Atlanta visits Tampa Bay this Sunday at 4:05. They're trying to avoid an 0-2 start to their year, just like the Giants.
So you pretty much summed it up. So the question for the live version of John Schmelk on our Accelerate Sports Complex phone line is, how did this happen?
I can probably pull the whole segment up by giving you that answer. And I think that's kind of why this, to me, is the worst loss of the Joe Judge era. You know, I think the Evan Engram drop last year was the reigning champion, and I think we now have a new leader in the clubhouse. Just because they had so many opportunities in all three phases to put this game away, and they just failed to, whether it was that Slayton drop on offense, not being able to, you know, convert that 3rd and 7 on their final offensive drive to basically put the game away, special teams, the offside penalty by Dexter Lawrence, defense basically giving up a score on 4 of the final 5 drives by Washington in the game. So every one of their units had a chance to put this thing away. All 3 failed. A lot of self-inflicted wounds with penalties, which has been very uncharacteristic of Joe Judge teams. They were one of the fewest penalized teams in the league last year. So, you know, you put that all together, just a really, really heartbreaking, gut punch, devastating type of loss for Giant fans.
Well, yeah, you look at the injuries on the offensive line with Shane Lemieux, and then, of course, what happened to Gates. And you sit back and you go, oh, boy, and they bring Matt Skura in, of course. But then you watch the game and you're like, you know, Daniel Jones had some time. Do these offensive line adjustments work? Well, they seem to yesterday. So I guess I go and look at the offensive coordinator, and I'm going to have you talk some sense into me because I'm just reacting as a fan, but I get frustrated with the predictability and some of the conservative calls of Jason Garrett. Am I right? Am I wrong? You tell me.
Garrett, you had a problem with Garrett's play calling last night?
Yeah, I get frustrated. I feel like he runs
this. Why? He was fantastic. How about that first drive of the game?
But
he's running play action, RP. RPOs. He's rolling Joneses out. He's doing quarterback keepers. I thought Garrett called a great game last night. If you want to have, if you want to talk about the last possession and just focus on that, that's fine. But up until then, they put 29 points on a really good Washington defense. LA just put 20 on him last week.
But don't you feel like he calls some of the same plays with Saquon, for example? And maybe that's because you know more than I do and they're nursing him back. But I feel like it's the same thing over and over again and they run him into the pile. Or is that the offensive line not doing their job?
Well, I mean, they ran that pitch play for Saquon outside. They lost 6 yards. You know, they had that little counter pitch play and lost 6 yards off the edge. So, look, there's only so many run plays you can run. You can run inside zone. You can run outside zone. You can run gap scheme. You could run duo man blocking. But there's only so many running plays you can run. So I honestly did not see that last night. I really didn't. I thought Jason Garrett called a very good game. I think the offense and the play calling was the like number 835 on the list of issues last night.
So is it fair to say I'm cool with you? Cool with you calling me out, telling me I'm wrong, 100%. So was this one of the better games Jason Garrett has called for this team? Or are all other parts improving around him?
I think this was one of the better games he's called for this team, to be honest with you.
I can live with that.
And I will also say this. I thought the offensive line in the first half did struggle. I mean, Daniel Jones got whacked around a lot in the first half, but I thought they were much better in the second half of this game. And I think that was part of Garrett, too, to be honest with you. We saw a lot more chipping with tight ends and running backs in the second half as he adjusted. So what Washington was trying to do with the pressure on the quarterback, and I think that did slow down the Washington rush as well. And I think a lot of it had to do with how he was helping out that offensive line, which is one of the reasons why I think it was one of his better cold games.
Okay.
John Schmelk, reporter of Giants.com, joining us on the phone lines here. John, the obviously a big moment in the game was the cameras catching Kenny Galladay, John at Daniel Jones on the sidelines. You know, I know that after the game, you know, Daniel Jones kind of downplayed it and everything. And obviously it's in the heat of the moment. Galladay wants the ball. Do you think any of this carries over? Do you think it was just a heat of the moment thing? Do you buy what Daniel Jones is saying? What's kind of the latest there?
Everything that I've heard is that this is already water under the bridge and it's not a big deal. I also would be very careful about knowing exactly who Galladay was talking to and what he was saying and the nature of the conversation. You know, Daniel's not someone that he'll take everything on him. And when he was asked about in the postgame press conference. So I am always very hesitant unless I'm there and a party to the conversation to comment on it because you really don't know what the context of this conversation was and every detail of it. So, no, I do not think it's a big deal. I just think it's one of those things on the sideline, middle of the game, heat of the moment. And that's just kind of what happens sometimes. Now, this becomes a habit. And you're seeing this every week, and it's becoming disruptive, then we can have a different conversation. But a one-time deal like that, I don't think it's a big deal.
Ojulari looking legit with 2 sacks through 2 games. You talked him up quite a bit. We've had this conversation in the past back around the draft. I like what I've seen. You need something on the edge. They've needed to improve in that area. Assess Azeez Ojulari.
I mean, 2 sacks in 2 games, you can't complain, right? Now, I do think both sacks was helped by some good coverage in the secondary to force the quarterback to hold the ball, but that's okay. You know, pass rushers need help from the secondary the same way the secondary needs help from the pass rush. So, yeah, I think you have to be happy. Now, he was going up against another rookie in Sam Cosmi who got obliterated by Joey Bosa last week. So I think that was a matchup that Giants had to do well to win. Well, look, I do think the pass rush has to be better in general, and I think that's another theme here. You talk about the Giants' defense and their secondary, Tony open receivers. They only have 3 sacks through 2 games here. That's not enough, and they're just not getting enough pressure. Leonard Williams has been pretty quiet the first couple games of the year here. So I think they need to figure out a way to get a more consistent pass rush if you want this defense to start taking some strides.
You know, it's frustrating for fans, and I'm sure for you to discuss these constant 0-2 starts. But we saw them get better last year over the course of the season, though. And there's an extra game this year. There's time to fix this. It's only 2 games. You can still get away with a, hey, it's early around here thing. What is on the table on both sides of the ball and with Joe Judge leading this team that should lead us to believe we're going to see a better football team from here on out?
Yes, it's still early, but yes, it's getting late fast. If those two things can both be true at the same time, you know, the numbers are not kind when you start the year 0-3 and your chances to make the postseason. Hey, heck, the numbers at 0-2 aren't very kind, but they're even worse at 0-3. Now, the good news is that the Giants at the Falcons coming to MetLife Stadium, and based off the first week, I think they're probably in the bottom third of the league in terms of quality of team. So I think that's a game you should have a good chance of winning. But they have some very talented offensive players that, you know, like I said, the Giants defense has struggles getting off the field. So we'll see. But look, the urgency is high here. You got to win this next game. But yes, there is still time. And look, the Dallas Cowboys just have all these injuries now. Randy Gregory's on the COVID list. DeMarcus Lawrence is going to miss basically half the year with a broken foot. Leo Collins is out with a substance abuse deal. That's like literally three of their best players. The Eagles, are they going to be able to carry over what they did in week one? Washington is just 1-1. So it's not like anyone in this NFC East is going to run away with the division. So, yeah, there's certainly time to correct this. But you better correct it quickly, because after the Falcons, you're going to New Orleans and to Dallas. Then you get the Rams at home. And then, by the way, after the Panthers, you have to play Patrick Mahomes in Kansas City.
Monday night.
So they better figure this stuff out quickly, yes.
John, you know, obviously the glaring mistake, the penalty on Dexter Lawrence, the offsides in the game-winning field goal. You know, how concerning is it, especially for Joe Judge coming in? He's supposed to be, you know, discipline, and this team, you know, continues to shoot itself in the foot when really, you know, he came in here in his introductory press conference, we're not going to beat ourselves, you know, and here the team is beating themselves, you know, again and again.
Yes, well, see, I agree. They did beat themselves last night. But I think that's been very uncharacteristic of Judge's first 18 games as Giants head coach. They were one of the least penalized teams in the league last year, bottom five in the league. And they've had some physical mistakes, like Evan Ingram dropping a pass. That's not a coaching thing, right? That's a physical thing. So, yes, last night was a situation where I think they were very undisciplined. I mentioned, you know, the Lawrence offside, which I saw some video saying, which looked like he might have just timed it perfectly. Maybe they should have thrown that flag. But look, it's a penalty. It's a penalty. It got called. Bradbury had a bad defensive holding. They had a couple false starts. Look, last night was bad. There's no argument around it, but I don't think that's something that's been constant throughout Joe Judge's tenure. I think for the most part, his team has been very well coached and very disciplined. Again, if this becomes a trend now moving forward, I think that's a problem. But I think last night was more of an aberration of Judge's tenure so far than it has been part of a pattern.
Fair enough. Appreciate you, John Schmelk. Of course, Giants.com. Nice enough to join us. Lock it in 3:15 every Friday if you're a Giants fan right here on ESPN Radio. Exit 31 is also at QSportsTalk.com. We're going to talk to Jeff Abramo next.
This is Exit 31.
And what a beautiful day for the sport of Kings, of which I am a huge fan. Seriously, I'm just a fan. I was on my way to my seat. The door was open.
Hey, what are you doing?
No.
Exit 31 with Rain and Spencer on ESPN Radio and QSportsTalk.com.
We've given away some tickets to the Albany game this weekend here on QSportsTalk.com so that fans can go inside the Loud House. And the reason why I bring that up is because we're now joined by Jeff Abramo with Inside the Loud House on FanSided. Jeff, welcome to the airwaves here. Just, I guess, give us an opening statement on how you're feeling about this game, you know, against Albany, what you're thinking that Syracuse needs to do this weekend to at least bring some positives out of a game that, you know, is really kind of a throwaway here.
Well, my opening statement is that I will not be making the drive up from New Jersey for this one. I was up there last weekend following the Rutgers bus, had to follow the Rutgers bus back. Was not a fun drive. But look, I mean, this is a game that, to your point, it should be a throwaway game in our schedule. I don't see a 40-point win from where I look at this team. I think this is one of those games that we're going to probably grind out a 25-point win out of, you know, from my perspective. And I'll tell you right now, I think that I would rather see a 34-13 type game where we actually run a lot of different passing plays. We let both quarterbacks stretch the field, use different parts of the field, actually acknowledge the existence of a tight end, which would be crazy.
Imagine.
And actually see what we, I know, right? I mean, and actually see what we have in the passing game. I mean, I don't necessarily need to see Tucker run for 200 yards this game. I know he's a great running back. I need to see what we have from the passing game. I'd like to actually see what we have, you know, from Garrett Trader, considering this is supposedly a quarterback competition, although I don't know how much of a competition it is when the guy that we don't know is only getting a quarter of the snaps and the guy that we've seen for years is getting three quarters. But either way, I want to see what we could do in the passing game. To me, that's important.
Jeff Abramo with Inside the Loud House here on ESPN Radio X31, of course, QSportsTalk.com. So who is your guy? Excuse me. Who's your guy? Is it Garrett? Is it Tommy? Have you seen enough out of Tommy over these last handful of years? Or do you want to see what the future holds? Because Tommy's out of here after this year. And you can see there's numerous aspects of this team where it's going to be a struggle throughout the season. I'm pretty sure. You know, the defense is good, but is Sean Tucker really going to be able to put up numbers every game? Is Tommy, if he's named the starter, going to be able to have enough time with that offensive line? It's still a question. Throw the ball around. You assess from there.
Well, you know what? To quote Dino Babers, who I think is an absolutely great and masterful speaker, it's not my fault, but I don't know. Okay. I haven't seen enough of Trader yet at this point. And frankly, I don't really care who the quarterback is. The one who I want the quarterback who can use the field, who can use the tight end. I want the quarterback who can run a passing game that is consists of more than dump off, deep sideline out pattern. I don't know if Trader can do that. I'm pretty sure if DeVito can't, and if he can, they certainly haven't run those plays yet. But what I want to see is I want to see both guys get an actual fair chance to run a complete passing tree. And then the one who does it best should be the guy going forward. Honestly, I think Rutgers should have been a game that they each got a half. And then he should have picked a guy who played all of Albany, because this game could be your chance to say, okay, let me see if my selection actually bears out. Cause this is a game that I probably can do pretty much what I want. And if it's the wrong guy, we probably will still win. Rutgers should have been the game that they each got a half on. I think that Schrader did well enough late in that first half that he should have played more in the second, but who am I?
That's interesting that you said that, because we've been talking that, you know, the performance against Albany, giving them each a half, isn't going to be the litmus test, because it's a drop down in talent and it's an expected blowout, a rout, if you will, whether it's 25 points or 30 points. Nothing that either quarterback does against this team is representative of what they're going to face against Liberty. And then when we jump up back into the Power 5 and the ACC specifically, what you're going to face the rest of the season. And after that, I mean, you get going with Florida State, who some have predicted Syracuse can beat. And of course, shouldn't they? Because they lost to Jacksonville State. But take that and run with it. Expand on that. Jeff Abramo's on with us here on ESPN Radio.
Well, I agree with you. I think that Rutgers was very representative of the average level of talent that we would see in the ACC, right? Yeah, I mean, they're not an elite Big Ten team, but they're representative of the Wake Forest type team. They're representative of potentially the current talent level of a Florida State. So getting a good half of play from each of those, I think that would have been a really good opportunity to see, all right, what can these guys do against these teams going forward? You know, at the end of the day, I think that he's already decided on Tommy. I don't see how you can, based on the amount of snaps they've gotten so far, even if Schrader played the entire game against Albany and excelled, I don't necessarily know how you can make a switch there from what you've had for years based on a few snaps till now and then a game against Albany, right? So I think it's going to be Tommy, and that's okay. I have nothing against Tommy. Just give him a passing tree to work with. Give him a game plan that allows him use the entire field. You know, I personally think that, you know, Luke Benson is a borderline NFL caliber guy. I mean, I'm not saying he's necessarily going to go there, but I think he has the tools that in the right offense could potentially get him, you know, a look on Sundays. I don't think it's going to happen here, and I think that's a shame.
Talking with Jeff Abramo with Inside the Loud House on Fansided here on ESPN Radio, QSportsTalk.com. You're listening to Exit 31. Jeff, the men's basketball schedule came out yesterday. You know, the final game, the swan song for Coach K and Duke at the Carrier Dome, February 26th. You also got games like you know, the non conference games, Villanova and Georgetown, on December 7th and December 11th, respectively. So now that the full schedule is out, the conference part portion coming out yesterday, are there any other games? What are some games that you have circled that you're looking forward to?
Well, you know what I'm looking the most forward to based on the structure of the schedule right now is the fact that, you know, we have our typical ramp up where we play some of the teams that we're expected to beat. Then we go into the non-conference tournaments. And then I'm looking forward to the way that we use the Lehigh and the Cornell games, which is basically two games against lesser opponents in the span of 18 days. How are they going to recalibrate? How are they going to take the offense and, I'm sorry, the way the lineup they put on the court in those tournament games, and how are they going to adjust that as they get ready for the ACC? I think that's really an exciting opportunity to sort of make some adjustments that really allow us to hit the ground operating at full capacity when we get into the full ACC schedule. And I'll tell you what's interesting to me is that I've been, so I live in Jersey now, I've been to probably 35 football games since I graduated from Syracuse in 1999. I have not been to a single Syracuse basketball game up in the dome since that date. My birthday is February 26th. Do I want to treat myself to that game or not? I don't know if I want to deal with that circus or if I'd rather go to something a little bit more relaxed.
I say get in the car.
I say you do
it. Get in the car. Give it a go.
Everybody has told me this.
Yeah, it's Coach K's last game there. I mean, that's something you're going to remember the rest of your life.
Yeah, there's extenuating circumstances. If you know what? If he wasn't retiring and maybe you could consider it the following year or for years past, I would say yes. But Jeff Abramo, get in the car and get back up here to the Cuse and the Carrier Dome and take part in that. So, listen, I think you're right, though. That point in the schedule you brought up with Lehigh and Cornell, that's what you can know this team is already. I mean, look at some of the competition you'd be facing in the battle for Atlantis or the ACC Big Ten Challenge when you face Indiana. You're going to know who this team is. And, of course, going to be led by Buddy Boeheim. I think we all know that. Yeah. He's been discussed as a potential NBA-caliber talent at this point. What we saw in the tournament last year certainly is promising. He's ranked number 73 out of the top 100, according to ESPN. Can he play himself into those two rounds of the NBA draft? What expectations do you have for Buddy this year?
I think he's going to have a good year. I think he's absolutely going to be playing for a paycheck in a year from now. Can he get into that second round? My gut says we're looking at a guy who's going to blow people away, but it's probably going to be looking at a free agent type contract, maybe a two-way to start. I don't know that he's going to necessarily be draftable. I don't think that the problem, I think, with the way Syracuse's roster is constructed this year is I think that we have really, really good depth at the top. I don't know that we have the ninth or 10th guy that I always wish we'd see playing, but we usually don't. But we have eight really good guys, and I think that he's going to get a lot of the touches, but I think it's also going to be spread around from some of the new guys we have. Benny Williams, I think, is going to be a really good player. Cole Swider, I'm curious to see what he does. So I don't know that he's going to have the type of run where he can become that, draft day guy. But I do think he'll be playing for a paycheck, and I think he's going to have a great year.
So Jeff Abramo with Inside the Loud House on the Fansided Network is with us here on ESPN Radio and Exit 31, of course, at QSportsTalk.com. I got 60 seconds left. Is Jesse Edwards going to have a breakout year? Something I've seen discussed a bit on your publication.
I think Jesse Edwards has a very good potential to have a breakout year. And I think that in many ways, if he does, that bodes very, very well for this team going forward. If they can stabilize that center position and they can actually have a functional, successful alternative to the small lineup that I think they'll often run out there with the three forwards, I think this team has a chance of being very dangerous in the ACC.
You used the same word that I had, stability at center. That's going to be a key. And if he brings it, Jesse Edwards brings it. Oh, boy, going to be a great one for Syracuse this year. Jeff, let's do this again. We really appreciate the time. Have a great weekend, okay?
You as well. Thanks a lot.
Jeff Abramo with us here on Exit 31 on ESPN Radio. Right back with the last thing we'll say today.
This is Exit 31. Here is Rain Stradamus and Nostra Davidson on ESPN Radio and QSportsTalk.com. Here's the last thing we'll say today.
Spencer, pause 1 second. Glue Guy, you and I will return for Yankees on Deck at 6 o'clock tonight from, Frohn & Son Funeral and Pathfinder Bank and the Killebrew Saloon. They were a little disappointing and choked yesterday. That should be a fun one, right? How do they lose?
Good question. Against the O's. And by the way, this is my vote for best beat.
Yeah, you like this one?
Yes.
As far as the rejoins?
Yes.
Yeah, there's a couple of good ones.
We got some good ones, man.
Since the Exit 31 rebrand. Last thing we'll say today will also include my mention of Utica College. Listen, we've got all over Syracuse and Albany for the better part of the past 2 hours with lots of great guests on the phone in our own discussion. But Blaise Faggiano, for our listeners in Utica, Roman 96.5 FM, the head coach of Utica College, takes a 2-0 team into what they want as an orange out in Gaetano. It's their home opener, 6 o'clock tomorrow. They play Western New England. Damn good team. Utica College Pioneers, fear the moose. They're looking good this year.
Yeah, 2-0.
So they draw some great crowds over there. And you know what? And if you just like football, you want to watch the D3 level, we got to support them too. Thought we'd pass that along. You know what else I've learned today? That Buddy Boeheim not only has his own cereal, but he wanted to be an apple farmer. If you haven't seen his Instagram, I highly recommend you watch that. It's pretty funny stuff. Oh, and he threw out the first pitch of the Syracuse Mets the other day, and he threw a strike. What can't Buddy Boeheim do?
The dude is everywhere.
He entertained me on video. He likes donuts.
Who doesn't?
Yeah, I mean, who doesn't? But any closing thoughts for everybody here on a Football Friday? How are you feeling about your Jets as we get ready to welcome Brent and Orange Nation in, or on the block in here?
I feel pretty good about the Jets. I mean, you know, I think from what I saw with Zach Wilson in the second half and the offense kind of starting to roll and starting to move, march down the field on Sunday, you know, I feel pretty good. I feel like they can build off it. The problem is, are the bad habits going to stick around? Is the offensive line going to implode? So consistency, much like with the Giants, is one of the things I want to see from the Jets. But I do feel like they'll start to figure it out moving forward. Like I said, I think this is a 6-win team.
Syracuse or the Jets?
Both.
Okay, continue.
I think it's a 6-win team. From what I saw in the first half, I was like, oh boy, why did I choose that? What I saw in the second half, if they can do that consistently, I think they can get to that total.
But how big, you brought up your offensive line, and I know we only got about 30 seconds left, but how big is the loss of Becton in solidifying that and giving you any chance for this season to get to those 6 wins?
Massive. But again, he's out for, you know, 6 to 8 weeks, I think. And I thought he was going to be out for the year, hands down, no problem. So, you know, hopefully they can get him back for the end of the season.
The Giants are 0-2. The Jets are going to be 0-2 after this weekend. Ha. I still say the Giants have a better record, but then again, that's not saying much.
Yeah, we'll see.
Comparison with the Jets.
Yeah.
You're on the block with Brent Axe at the top of the hour. And as promised, Glue Guy and I are back at 6 for Yankees on Deck. It's ESPN Radio, QSportsTalk.com. See you soon.